Search number 26579.
Mr. Clark, Rio 20. Now, you were just telling me how you met this journalist and the man who was responsible for the nickname. Now, what did you say to him?
I just told him that I wasn't very impressed, that I advised him to drink up and leave the club, as I wasn't very happy about what he was boasting about. It also, which he did, he finished his drink and walked out of the club.
Now, would you have hit him, or...?
I don't think so. No, I was a bit more mature by then. 20 years earlier, I probably hit him. And as it happened, the gentleman who owned the club, a bloke called John Schwartz, a Swiss guy, I went straight into his office and explained the situation, what happened, like, you know. John said, "Don't worry, Ed," he said, "I'll sort this." And a week later, the guy got a letter telling him he was persona non grata in the club, that he was no longer allowed to come into the club. So that's that finished, the poisoned wharf episode finished to my satisfaction.
So you'd not been ever involved in any of these fights in the Coliseum?
Oh, no, no, I was, no, I used to...
You were too old for that,
oh,
then?
Oh, no, I was a sergeant then, and we didn't get any drinking there. It was only the junior ranks and the riflemen that used to haunt this place.
Now, is there anything else about... Well, we're talking about the Germans. We got a bit distracted onto the poisoned dwarf.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me about the relationship with the Germans, generally. How did you get on with them?
Very good, actually. They say that the troops used to fight amongst each other, and these bargees. But as far as we were concerned, living in my quarters, living close proximity to the Germans, we got on exceptionally well. Especially, you know, you would find that the vast majority of senior NCOs, they would pick a nice little respectable pub near where they lived, and they would frequent there. And that, we had a lovely little pub just 5 minutes walk up from our house called Zertana, run by a chap, an ex-German ex-Wehrmacht sergeant, who'd spent 5 years in Russian captivity. And they were a lovely family. We got on exceptionally well, and the people whom we met in the pub were very nice.
And there were no lingering resentments?
No, none whatsoever, none whatsoever. And I started to learn as much German as I could. And to finish up, I started speaking quite reasonable German. And this enhanced my friendship with the people in the pub. They appreciated this, like, you know. And, man, I've forgotten it all now, like, you know. But at the time, it came in very, very handy. And my wife and I had a great social life there, both from the military point of view and from the civilian point of view. And I never ever can remember any animosity between us, you know.
Anything else about that tour of duty?
Not a lot. Just the fact that I got a new company commander.
Now, who was that?
I'd rather not mention his name.
That's fair enough. I think I know why. So tell the story.
Well, this company commander, he was a bit of a tyrant in a way. So a mini tyrant. He used to like to have people, senior NCOs around him that would kowtow to him. And it's a bit difficult, really. He formed a clique, and if you didn't belong to the clique, or didn't want to get into the clique, then that was you, you'd had it. Now, as I've said during my narrative, and then I don't say it in a boastful fashion, really, I just got these results because I was a keen soldier. As you know, I got good results from all the courses I went on. And also, I had this first year's experience, and also having experienced the job as platoon commander from time to time. So I felt I was a very efficient soldier. When we would go to exercises after that, I would never mix with the hoi polloi, as it were, he and his the other senior NCOs, because they weren't up to much either, you know. I didn't go on really well with them. So, as time went on, I would find myself becoming more and more separated from this company commander. We didn't see eye, and as a consequence, we bits of the animosity would appear, and I got a bit fed up with it at the finish up. However, one day he made out a report. Now, every year in the army, you get as a senior NCO and officer, you get a confidential report. Well, I never had a bad confidential report in my life. I always had an excellent confidential report. And this guy gave me a lousy one. Lousy.
What did he say?
So he was just saying, he was virtually saying, well, to sum it up, when the colonel asked me what I thought about it, you know, you tell the colonel, was there anything you objected to? And when I read it, I said, sir, I said, if you believe this report, I shouldn't even be in the British Army, let alone be a sergeant in the British Army. He said, yes, well, I mean, can me to agree that he's gone a bit far here, like, you know. And I said, sir, I said, no, I said, I've always been quite successful in my army career. I said, I'm coming to virtually the twilight of my career. I'm getting near the end of my career, sort of thing. I said, I don't need this kind of thing to happen. So the colonel, this kettle, he kind of reluctantly agreed with me. Anyway, we did another season at the Senlager in Salter. I wasn't very happy at all, like, you know. And by the way, by this time my daughter was born. We'd been married 11 years, and this was our first birth. So that was the thing that brought some happiness into my life, like, you know. Anyway, we did this tour again at Salter, and then at the Senlager Salter, and things weren't very good at all. We just kept, he kept picking on me, criticising me, and what have you, like, you know. And I just got to the stage where I thought, well, when we get back from Salter, I'm going to ask for a transfer to another company. However, the system beat me to it. We were into the 60s by this time. And the next thing I knew was I was sent home to Scotland, to Troon in Ayrshire, to be interviewed by the commanding officer of the Junior Tradesmen's Regiment, stationed there.
Junior Tradesmen's?
Junior Tradesmen's Regiment.
I've not heard of that, but carry on now. Yeah. It'll come apparent, I think. Yeah.
So I had heard of junior leaders' battalions and what have you, and band boys and what have you, but this Junior Tradesmen's Regiment was a new thing to me. So what happened was I went home and I spent a week at this camp in Troon. Now, the commanding officer was a chap called Colonel Hogg, Lieutenant Colonel Hogg, Royal Artillery. He was a brother of Quentin Hogg, who eventually became Lord Hailsham. So what happened was they allowed me to walk about the regiment for 2 or 3 days, and I could go anywhere, any company, ask any questions I wanted, and just get the real feel of the place. And I thought, pretty good outfit this.
Now what was it
now,
doing?
The outfit was this, the Kessels company was the recruit company. These boys from 16 up to 17 years of age, or 15 and a half to 17 years of age, would come in and they would do 10 weeks training in Kessels company, the recruit company. When they'd completed their 10 weeks training, they would go off on leave, come back and be posted to other different companies. Now, they would train as clerks, wireless operators and drivers. And there was the staff who trained these chaps were chaps from the various regiments, like sergeants in the Royal Signals, RASC and what have you. And it was a very, very, very efficient way to handle young men, like, you know. The concept of the regiment was this. It was run on the lines of a boarding school in terms. It was run in the term system. And I looked around this for a week. Well, I got for 3 or 4 days. Then they gave me a pass to go and visit my mother and father in Hamilton. I went back to Germany. Oh, before I went, before I left, I had to get up in front of Colonel Hogg, and he asked me what I thought about it. I said, "Excellent, sir." I said, "I'm very, very impressed." And he said, "Well, the thing is," he said, "would you like to come here and work in Castle's company, in the recruit company? I see by your record here," he said, you've had excellent results on weapon training and drill, etc., you know? I said, "Yeah," I said, I think I would. He said, "Well, tell me what to do," he said. "Go back to your unit, give it a week, and then go and see your commanding officer. Think about it and talk about it with your wife." And he said, "See what you think about it." He said, "As far as I'm concerned," he said, "I'd be only too pleased to have you." Now, what's this effect, like, you know? And he said, "You decide what you want to do." But he said, "Starting in the term in September, there is a vacancy in Castle's company that you can fill."
Is it Castle's?
Castle's, Castles, called after General Castle, Jim Castle's. I think he was commander.
I thought I was mishearing it, yeah, Castle's company. So, now, you obviously decided to do it. What made you decide to do it? Was it because of this company commander and the colonel? Or what put it in your mind?
I came to the conclusion that there was going to be no more promotion for me. It was made not abundantly clear, but you could tell. Now, in fact, one instance, one of the sergeants in the company was junior to me, and he got made up to colour sergeant while I was on leave. When I came back, I created Mary Ellen. And this going to JTR was a consequence of this row I had with the company commander, like, you know, allowing this guy promoted over my head. So I discussed it with my wife and said, "Well, I said, I think it's a waste of time stopping here, just slogging my guts out with no prospects." Because my object in life was to try and be at least a warrant officer, so that when I came out of the army, I'd have a decent pension, decent lump sum in pension. That's what you soldier for, like, you know. But it didn't turn out that way. So anyway, when I went back and discussed it with my wife, and that, we spent a good week discussing it, she said, "Yes, I think you're right, Ed. We'll go back to Scotland." And she said, "Not only that, she'll get you ready for Civvy Street. At least you're in Scotland, and we can look around and find out what you want to do in Civvy Street." And that was as long and short of it. I went back and seen the colonel and said, "Yes, I'd certainly like to go back to Troon." So I prepared to leave the battalion. And I left the battalion in August of 1963. And reported in at Troon. But once again,
what were your reactions? Because that was the last time you were with the regiment, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
How did you feel?
I think my feelings were quite mixed. One of dismay, one of disappointment, and one of relief. You know, that was the kind of, I think that was the, because I knew that I'd come to the bits of the end of my career.
You knew you weren't going back to the, you knew you'd never get back to the Cameroni Rock.
Oh, definitely, yeah. But there was a little incident that happened later on that I'll tell you about, but anyway.
So what happened when you got to Troon then?
Well, we had a new car. We bought a new car in Minden, and the lovely Hillman Minx, brand spanking new, for £450. We drove back from Minden and had a couple of weeks leave. We went up to a place called Jarrah, northeast England, and spent a few days with my wife's sister, and then went to my parents in Hamilton. My parents, who hadn't seen the little one, like, you know, she was about 14 months by this time. I then duly reported to Troon, where we drove in that day, and there was a married quarter waiting for us. And I went in to check this married quarter, very nice indeed. The main thing I looked for was cleanliness. You know. And to me, it was lovely and clean, and it was lovely married quarter. And then I reported in to Castle's company on the start of the term, first day of the term. It was a Thursday. The new recruits would come in on a Thursday. And I was attached to this platoon under a big staff sergeant called Stan Green, RASC. Stan had been in the Guards, and it showed. Although he was an RASC now, it showed. He was a big guardsman, he was 6 feet two or something. And at the other end of the spectrum, height-wise, was the platoon commander, Mr. Pound. Stan used to call him Mr. Weights and Measures. And he was ever so small, but my height, like, you know, maybe smaller. Immediately we struck up a great rapport. I was there as a sort of supernumerary, as it were, to train, learning how to the drill for the 10 weeks training. And as I say, right from the word go, terrific atmosphere. I got on smashing with them.
They wouldn't be doing light infantry pace, would they?
No. This is where my guards training came to fruition. What happened was that I was sort of supernumerary, learning the ropes. Now, the composition of the platoons there was a platoon commander, not usually a lieutenant, sometimes a captain, a senior sergeant or a staff sergeant, and a sergeant, with junior NCOs, lance corporals and corporals, who were in charge of the barrack rooms. Now, these junior NCOs were in the process of doing their actual trade training, but they slept in Castle's company and reported their trade companies every morning. So after the first 10 weeks, what happened was that the young recruits, they would do, I think it was 4 weeks, 4 weeks training, and then they passed out. And they would have an open day with their parents, who came from all over Britain, would come in and visit them, like, you know, and see the pass out parade. And they would be treated to a lovely meal in the big dining room. Now, the camp itself was all huts, various huts, but very, very, very efficient. And the kitchen and dining room was excellent. The nappy facilities were excellent. So the young men had everything. Mind you, not that they had much time to socialise or go and drink in the canteen. But from day one, I thoroughly enjoyed the job. And then at the end of the 10 weeks and the start of the next new term, I took over my squad, a platoon. And I had the sergeant who worked with me, a bloke called Ken Muir. He was the Queen's Own Highlanders. Terrific chap. He was my second in command, as it were. Like. And the platoon commander was a big chap in the RASC called Peter Nordman, Lieutenant Nordman. And once again, terrific team. We hit it off straight away. We really, from day one. And really, I never looked back from that day. I spent 5 years with them. And the only thing was that the platoon commanders would change, because they were only there for about maybe an 18-month, a year, an 18-month tour. And then the sergeants would change, you know. So in all, I had Ken Muir, a chap from the artillery, and a chap from RASC during my tour of duty there. But once again, it was just basic recruit training. Drill, but they didn't drill with weapons, though. That was the only thing. We would do the normal weapon training, drill, and also, so you were encouraged to give a kind of lecture on any subject you fancied, like, you know, which would be in the evening. You'd get your squad into the television room and give them a lecture about something, somewhere you'd been, like, you know, and encourage all this. Now, Colonel Hogg, a terrific bloke, he was, once again, of the old school, very much old. And he'd obviously been a boarder. He went to school as a boarder because he ran the JTR as a boarding school thing. He was very strict. He brooked no nonsense. And you had to be super efficient and live up to high standards. For obvious reasons, you were dealing with a lot of young men who were starting off in life, you know, barely, not like an 18-year-old recruit. These boys from 15 and a half to 17, you know. The social life was very good. We had a nice sergeant's mess there. And the only thing is, we worked very hard. You wouldn't get finished work till about 9 o'clock at night. Nip into the mess for a quick beer before going home. Saturday night, the social life was pretty good, but we also had to work weekends. Saturdays and Sundays. The weekends comprised mainly of maybe a company commander's room inspection in the morning, followed in the afternoon by sport. Now, sport was terrific there. We had all sorts of good sport, football, hockey, basketball, a lot. And I had a terrific distinction of being the only recruit company to ever win the intercompany boxing. I trained the boxing team, and we romped it, we hammered the terrific. I was absolutely delighted. With 10 guys went into the ring on the Friday night, and on the Saturday night we had 10 more. We had nine left, so we never lost a fight on the Saturday night. And on the Monday, Colonel Hogg got me up, congratulated me. He said, I don't think this will ever be repeated again either. He said, it's a great thing, right, you know? And naturally I was dead chuffed. The next thing that happened was this, that after about 3 or 4 months there, the company commander, a Royal Scot called Major Mothersill, Hugh Mothersill, thorough gentleman. And he sent for me, he said, I'd like you to read this report. So I sat down and read the report. Oh no, he said, read this report. I said, well, it was from the Cameroonians, I don't want to know. I said, I've brushed him out of my life. Oh, he said, you better sit down and tell me about it, you know. Anyway, I sat down and told him what happened. He said, oh, it's dreadful. But another 3 or 4 months later, Colonel Hogg sent for me. He said, I'm putting you forward for promotion, Sergeant Clark, he said. Because he said, having looking at the record and looking at the time you've got to do, he said, I think it's only fair that you should get your promotion, even though you're here, he said. And I'm quite willing to have you either as a colour sergeant or a warrant officer, he said. I'm only too pleased to, like, you know. And I thought, fantastic, this is great. This guy had read my record and thought, well, what's the score here, like, you know, why is this guy with all these qualifications not being recognised? That was the long and short of it, as far as I was concerned. So anyway, I said, well, that's very kind of you, sir. I said, I'd appreciate that very much. I said, and I'm more than willing to stay here. And off the application went, and about a month later I was sent for him. He said, oh, he said, you can get your promotional rights, but you've got to go back to the Cameroonians. I said, what? He said, yeah. He said, the records have insisted. He said, it's obviously influenced by the Cameroonians that you get promoted to colour sergeant, but you've got to go back to the Cameroonians. I said, sir, I said, my attitude right now, he said, I have no doubt, he said, you'll accept this, he said, but he said, I'll be sorry to see you go. I said, sir, I said, I'd rather stay here as a happy sergeant than go back to the Cameroonians as an unhappy colour sergeant. He said, is that how you feel? I said, exactly how I feel. Well, he said, that's dreadful, he said. He said, what a waste of a career. Like, he was very, very sympathetic towards me. And that was it. It was finished then, like, you know. And then, the other thing that I excelled in, every term I won the drill competition. We used to have a drill competition.
Now tell me about the drill competitions. Well, what were they like?
There was 3 squads in the company. And this is what I say. This is where I say that my guards training stood me in great stead. And I used to, once I got back into the swing of the old heavy infantry drill, I really enjoyed it, thoroughly enjoyed it. And all the old tricks that they taught me at Pirbright, how to instruct, you know, doing a right turn and positioning of the squad, that was terrific, you know, having a squad in semi-circle and what have you, like, you know, to for various drill movements. And a certain part of the term, I forget which part of the term, but it's near the end of the term, obviously, we'd have this drill competition. And what would happen was you'd have an adjutant, a warrant officer, and funnily enough, a guards. The drum major was a guardsman from the Coldstream Guards. I forget his name now. Nice guy. They would be out in the square with their little boards, like the clipboards, and then you started drilling the squad. Like, you They would inspect the squad first. The agent would inspect the squad first and march the ducting and what have you, like, you know. And then when you finish inspecting, you say, right, carry on. And the drill routine was laid down. You know, right turn, quick march, and saluting on the march, saluting at the halt to bring them back again, you know. Saluting to the right, saluting to the left. Inclines. Oh, it was just, you threw the whole gambit of the drill book. And then at the end of the day, the marks would be totted up, and at the final pass out parade, just before the lads went to leave, the presentation of a beer mug. I don't know where mine have all gone. I think I've got one left somewhere. But the CO and the adjutant would come and present you with the mug and the shield for the best drill squad. I never lost it, one yet, one every one of them, you know. And it was also a good thing, on the night of the final, the other sergeants would get in the mess where they invite the adjutant in, and the other guys who had been adjudicating with a good old piss up in the mess in the night. It was a terrific social thing, like, you know.
How did you get on with the lads? Because they were younger than you were used to, weren't they? I mean, they were only...
You had to be very, very careful. Very careful, because the senior guys were more or less what in puberty. They were just starting to just come. It was the first time out of the nest. Although you had to be strict up to a point, you had to be very, very careful not to overdo it, because these lads could be prone to bursting into tears, and that's the last thing you wanted. You know, you didn't want them bubbling all over the place. A very funny incident happened one day on the drill square. There was this young bloke called Grochowski. His parents were Polish. His father had been a captain in the Polish army. His mother had been a sergeant in the Polish army. And one day I was taking the drill parade, and this guy was doing everything all wrong. And I went up to him and I started yelling at him, like, you know. And I said, I just wish to Christ I could pronounce your name, you know. He said, don't worry. He said, everyone calls me George. Well, I did a sharp about turn, handkerchief out of the pocket, handkerchief up to me, and the platoon's in hysterics, absolute hysterics. So I let him, you know. So I turned about, then we got back to business again. So anyway, what happened was the word got around that everybody called Grochowski George. Anyway, what I did was, it was a nappy break, so I called them into the office, the little platoon office at the end of the huts, and I said, now look, you're not leaving this bloody room till I can pronounce your name. I said, I'm not calling you George, no way, I said. So he said, it's no problem. He was a bit of a well-educated young lad, like, you know. And by the time he left the office, 10 minutes later, with no nappy break, I could pronounce Grochowski. And the funny thing was that shortly after that, I'm passing the CO, Colonel Hogg, and I threw him up a salute. Oh, I said, Sergeant, come here, I said, I want to ask you something, he said. How's George getting on? I said, beg your pardon, sir. He said, George, in your platoon. I said, you mean Grochowski, sir? And he started laughing. He said, yes, I heard all about the bloody incident, he said. And he said, I'll tell you now, he said, you handled it exceptionally well. He said, and I can hear he said you can pronounce his name. I said, that was it, yeah. So, anyway, that was, at the end of the thing, they had, they did the 10 weeks training, and then they went off, a couple of weeks leave, or maybe 3 weeks leave. It was, and this is why I loved it, because you didn't have an allotment of leave, as you normally did in a unit, say maybe 21 days a year. Every time the squad passed out, you had maybe 3 weeks leave. And the duties were organised so that you could, if you wanted to go away somewhere for a couple of weeks, the RSM used to alter the roster to make sure you did your duty. But also, another thing was, by the way, in accommodation-wise, at the end of these spiders, as they call them, the spiders were in a square, with ablutions in the centre. And at the end of each, at the end of one corridor was his platoon office. At the other end was a little room with a bed, table on it, and a little locker. Now every night there'd be a senior NCO on duty in that spider to make sure that there was no nonsense. You know, and you were there, what you did was you went on duty at 8 o'clock till 6 o'clock the next morning. And you just made sure that there was no horseplay,